Welcome, everybody. SF Live, episode number 30 already. Today is Wednesday, May 13th. Time is flying. And I'm joined by a good friend of mine, Ralph Rushton. He's the president and CEO of Aftermath Silver. But as a reminder, as always, you guys have been listening to this for a while now, but please use hashtag AskAAG for your questions during this live stream. We're going to be on for about 15, 20 minutes, and we'll get to the Q&A part at the end of our session here. Also, follow us on Twitter. Make sure you subscribe to our channel here. Give us a thumbs up if you like it, but also follow us on YouTube, Instagram, and also now Spotify and other podcast platforms. So make sure you get your podcast on there. So let me switch over to Mr. Ralph Rushton. Ralph, how are you doing today? How are things?
I'm very good, Kai. How are you?
Oh, hanging in there. You can hear, like, I've been having allergies for the last 8 weeks, probably. So I sound worse by the day, but alive and kicking. So,
yeah, my son's discovered the joys of hay fever this year for the first time.
Oh, I don't wish it on anybody. It's brutal. It's like, probably, like, people have been listening to the interviews a while now, just wondering why I sound so nasal. It's just like for the last 8 weeks, ever since mid-March, ever since we went into isolation, it's been bad. But enough about myself. Like, you're working from home. How are things? How is Aftermath affected by COVID? Let's get that out of the way before we dive into the projects and drill on some details.
Yeah, well, I've been working from home for 3 or 4 years now, on and off, and certainly there was no great change with Aftermath. We can come or go into the office as we choose, so that's been no change for me. I'm a little heavier, perhaps a little less exercise. On the COVID side of things, we're restricted as are most people. There's no international travel for us at the moment, so we can't get down to the projects in Chile. And as you and I were just discussing, you know, it sounds like the restrictions in Chile are actually about to get more stringent rather than relax. We just heard half an hour ago that Santiago is on full quarantine lockdown after a big spike in cases. For us, it's frustrating. We would like to get geologists, surveyors, drill companies on site to start assessing, the programs that we're proposing and start costing those programs, but we just can't at the moment. We can't get anyone down there, and we can't ask anybody to get on to travel in a potentially risky situation.
Yeah, because you mentioned before we came on here, like, Antofagasta is on lockdown. Santiago just announced, I think it was the mayor of Santiago that announced, like, within the last hour, that Santiago is going to go on lockdown because they had a massive surge in cases as well. So give us an update. Like, what can you work on right now for Aftermath? You got a lot of data. You took over some projects that were in production before. So what can you do with your hands tied right now? Like, what can you do from home?
There's a few aspects to it. One is obviously the financial and the cash position. The second one would be the legal paperwork and documentation that we need to progress in Chile. And the third would be the technical side of the programs. That's probably the most that's been moving forward fairly quickly. We've been able to gather as much of the data as we could. With the Chaocoyo project in particular, there was a very well organized data room. So our geologist, Peter Bulgaris, has spent the last couple of months digitizing and putting together the data in a usable format, generating cross sections, long sections, maps, satellite imagery, everything we need basically when we can get back on the ground. So that's in a very good advanced state. The paperwork that we need, we are filing the paperwork with the Chilean government that shows that we are the registered operator or manager of the subsidiary companies that hold the projects down there. That is moderately complicated because Chile is fairly bureaucratic. So everything needs to be notarized. Then it needs to go to the Chilean consul. Then it needs to go to the BC Law Society to verify that the notary is a real notary. Then it has to go down to Chile and be filed with the government. So that stuff's been slowed down because the consul was closed, the BC Law Society was closed, and the guys in Santiago can't move around. But it's moving forward slowly. And then the third aspect to it would be the sort of financial situation of the company. And we've been able to raise $1.5 million last week via a placement from a fund. So that puts us in a stronger financial situation to carry out the programs that we'd like to carry out. And we've also had some warrant exercises recently that's brought in a little bit more cash. So financially, we're feeling fairly good about where we are.
No, since you're talking about financials, give us some more details on that. Who are your main shareholders, and how much cash do you have in total now after raising $1.5 million? And since we're talking about financials, maybe as a follow-up to having cash in the bank, what was your originally proposed budget, which just probably changed an hour ago? So,
yeah. Well, I mean, we've got about 3.2 million in the bank. We had some hefty property payments at the end of last year to kick off the sort of ownership transfer of the project. We've got about 3.2 million. What was the second part of that question? Sorry.
Expiration expenditure. Shareholders first. Sorry. Shareholders first, and then let's talk about expiration budget that you had planned and how that might be changing now.
Yeah, well, Eric Sprott would be the largest shareholder. You know, as we're all aware, he's been putting a lot of money into the sector recently, and he invested $3 million into us last year. He currently owns about 17.5% of the company. And then our new shareholder, Palisade Goldcorp, would be the second largest shareholder with about 8.5%. Insiders on an issued basis are around, I think, 3% of the company, 7% fully diluted. My own position at the moment is about 103,000 shares. It's not big, but it's growing slowly. And then in terms of the budgets for the programs, that's partly on hold because we actually don't have a clear idea what the drill costs will be.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. And you joined the company in September last year, correct?
I did. Yeah, I was first talking to Mike about joining the company in August. And then eased in through September and went full time in October. Yeah.
No, fantastic. Because just in regard to, like, you bought your shares in the market, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
I bought some in the market, and I also bought some in a private placement at 20 cents. So I'm in at the same price as Eric Sprott is.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. there was
an 8 cent private placement that was closing around the same time, but I personally felt that would be better off being taken down by retail and institutional shareholders rather than insider come in and try and muscle into that. So I took it down at 20 cents.
No, fantastic. That's good. So it's all bought for because you came in afterwards. So let's talk about the projects in a little more detail. They're silver projects, obviously. First of all, like my first question, we had a call about 10 days ago or so, but my first question was like, why Chile? Like, you know, why'd you go there? It's a little more expensive, but why Chile? Maybe you can enlighten us.
We still think it's one of the premier, if not the premier, mining jurisdictions in the world. The rule of law applies. Yes, it's bureaucratic, but it's a very clear legal fiscal jurisdiction. Geologically, it's up there with the top two or three jurisdictions in the world. There is both primary and co-product and byproduct silver production. I think they produce about 40, 45 million ounces a year of silver. There's a huge pool of talented people there, engineers, geologists, educated to the same standard as we are. So you know, you can get on the ground and you can start work fairly rapidly. We had done a fairly detailed survey of silver projects across Latin America. This was done in 2017, and these two projects were fairly close to the top of the list of those as ones that we felt were high priority. And the opportunity arose to acquire both of them. They're projects with extensive mining histories, with defined historic resources, and that was important for us. We didn't want to be in the position where we were looking at grassroots exploration and having to, you know, tell our shareholders that they had a 5 or 6 year lead time to a resource. We wanted existing resources, near infrastructure, ones that we could advance fairly rapidly to PEA level, so preliminary economic analysis level, and make that sort of go, no-go decision fairly quickly.
Yeah. Let's dig down on the detail just a little more. So resource, like what do you have right now, and what's the plan for increasing, improving, or just remodeling it?
Well, I would preface that by saying both of these are historic resources. We are in the process of doing the work to verify one of the resources at the moment. The other one, for Chaya, we have not verified that resource. So they are historic, and the usual cautionary statements would apply to that, but they have to be treated, you know, with a little bit of caution.
Yeah, we don't want to get you into trouble or hot water here, so.
No. Chaya has a resource, an underground indicated resource of about 5 million tons at about 200 grams silver. So it's about 30 million contained ounces. Mm-hmm. That is an underground resource. From our perspective, we are at Chaya actually looking to generate an open pit resource. So we can probably look at slightly lower grade material and possibly slightly higher tonnages. That's what we would be looking to define down the road. Something that's economic at lower silver prices than an underground resource. At Cachinal, the resource currently stands at around 17, 18 million ounces of contained silver. It's about five and a half million tons of ore of mineralization, sorry, there, grading about 100 grams. But again, our objective there is looking at an open pit resource. So we don't believe that we need the high grades that you would need to sort of justify developing an underground operation.
Okay, no, that makes sense. So Chaya-Kuyo as well, like, what's the infrastructure look like locally? So you took over the project. It's been a past producer, hasn't it?
They're both past producers. Yeah, Chaya-Kuyo, we don't actually know what the production figures were there. It's fairly extensive, and the underground workings are extensive, but there aren't particularly good production records for it. The infrastructure, we have high tension power lines north and south of the project. It's basically, I think, due west of Tex Quebrada Blanca complex, which is being expanded at the moment. So we access the project via the Quebrada Blanca road. About 20 or 30 k's in, we turn south of that road, and that gets us to the project. We're 45 minutes off the Pan American Highway. It's relatively low down, about 1,500 meters, so it's not high up. We can work there all year round. And the Quebrada Blanca are building a large desalination water pipeline that's coming through our concessions. It's been granted an easement to come through there. It's a $500 million investment that's taking water up to Quebrada Blanca 2, the expansion program there. So infrastructure-wise, it's extremely good. Kachin Isle is the same. We're about 45 minutes off the Pan American Highway. We drive on the access road to Austral Gold's Guanaco processing plant, and then turn off that. And it's about another 15, 20 minutes away from there. Power in the region. There is some water in the region as well.
Yeah. Now you mentioned water. I think that's in Chile the most important resource that you need to actually go into production. What does it look like for you guys? There's drilling water you need, and then of course processed water is way more than drill water. So like, what's the situation there?
Yeah, that's right. The immediate requirement for us would be drill water. At Kachin Isle, there is water at the Guanaco processing plant, although we haven't approached Austral in terms of buying or taking from their boreholes. That's perhaps an option for us, but we would have to explore that. There's water on the Pan American Highway about 45 minutes away as well at a truck stop where they will sell, I think, sufficient water for a drill program. In terms of processed water, we're actively starting to think about exploring in the Kachin Isle region. We are aware of some areas where there are gaps in the water concessions that we believe we could perhaps take a look at and maybe stick some holes into down the road. But at the moment, the immediate priority would be drill water. Yeah. Chaya-Kuyo, we have currently a license there that gives us 12 and a half liters a second from an existing borehole. Mm-hmm. That is clearly, again, not sufficient for an operation. We think we probably need about three times that for an open pit operation there. So one thing we could look at is shifting that license for that borehole, that permit, to a higher production borehole, and then expanding the permit to give us more sort of right to draw water from it. Alternatively, we will again look at exploring in the region. Okay. For water. But yeah, I mean, you know, it is a question in Chile always, but we're not starting from zero. We do have both projects. We do have potential.
Oh, fantastic. No, I had a chat with Alex Black from Rio 2 the other day. And of course, if you follow that story, water's always been an issue and they're trucking it as well. So that's why it's always talking
about. Yeah, well, I think the Chilean government is saying that no more, you have to draw from existing sources or properly permit any exploration programs. It's very carefully controlled.
Yeah, no,
particularly for the large operations like Quebrada Blanca, where they're now having to build this $500 million pipeline to bring in desalination water.
Yeah, no, that's right. And you could probably tap into that, just stick a hose in it.
Yeah.
Nah. You mentioned something else as well. Like, or one thing I'm curious, like, what's the plan with the projects forward? So you have an understanding roughly, like, yes, it's historic resources, but there was a reason why you acquired it. Is there a near-term production scenario, like, in sight? Or, like, what's your plan moving forward? What's your business plan with the projects in general? Like, I think that's the overall question. Where do you want to take things?
We want to get to PEA level as fast as we can with both projects. So that would mean confirming the existing resources, perhaps upgrading those resources, you know, increasing the confidence categories, moving some of the inferred into indicated perhaps, and also demonstrating that there's sufficient tonnage at both projects to justify a reasonable size open pit operation. We're not looking at underground operations for either of them. So we're being fairly disciplined and careful about the design of the drill programs for both projects. Peter Bulgaris, the geologist involved, is also a mining engineer. So he's putting on his mining engineering hat and trying to look at what it is we would need to justify or to do sufficient engineering to justify an open pit operation at both projects. We're not coming at it from the typical geologist standpoint, which is just drill holes for the sake of it and see what you get at the end of it. We're looking to, as far as possible, be very targeted in where we're drilling.
Yeah. And your geo saying that is quite surprising. So,
well, he is a mining engineer.
You're a geo and you're running the company, right?
Oh, so. I'm a geo. Yeah. Well, it's a common fault of our business that we get carried away and we drill holes for the sake of drilling holes, and then you find yourself with a lot of data, but no disciplined economic model, and you then have to try and find out, you know, where it is you can slot your mine in. For that reason also, we're not looking at the moment at doing much exploration on parallel or subsidiary structures at either project. Our objective is to see if we can make them work on the main veins. At Kachinal, we're looking at the hanging wall of those veins, the main vein there, where we believe there are smaller high-grade structures that we could bring into an open pit resource. So both of them, we're not going to be doing any exploration drilling to try and find new targets for the time being. If we can't make them work on what we currently have there, the known structures, then we should move on.
Okay, no, that makes sense. You got $3.2 million in the bank right now, and you want to take both projects to PEA. So let's be realistic. Like, how much capital is needed? And the financing market is open right now for silver projects, and the silver price hasn't even started to run. What do you theoretically need, and do you see an opportunity to finance again maybe later this year, or like what's the plan in that regard?
Well, first and foremost, what we've got coming up at the end of the year, property payments. We have $1.5 million in property payments, $1 million to Mandalay, and we've got about $500,000 to the current owner of Kachinal, which is Halo, marijuana company that used to be Apogee Silver. So, you know, that's at the front of our mind is how we cope with those payments. So we're actively looking at that. You know, as you say, the financing market is clearly open at the moment for you know, quality projects. So and we just raised $1.5 million. Whether we raise any more, we'll see. Then in terms of the programs, again, it comes down to costing. At the moment, I can't give you specific costs on that. What I can say is the first stage work at Kachinal that we'd like to do, we estimate would be about $600,000. Sorry, Chaikoyo.
Yeah.
Would be about $600,000. What we'd like to do there is take we're aware of a number of boreholes that were drilled historically that have never been fully assayed or cut. So we'd like to take those holes, or certainly the ones that are going through the area that we find most interesting, cut them, assay them, and incorporate that into the resource calculation. So that program would be about $500,000. And then at Kachinal, we would like to get on the ground, first of all, and do 3D laser surveying of the underground voids.
Okay.
Drillers don't like drilling into holes. It can be quite destructive for drilling equipment. So that's the first step we need. And also to do some metallurgical test work on material that we know is at surface.
Okay. I think we should switch over to Twitter. We've been getting some questions in, and let's switch that over, and let me just update this here, because we got a question from Brian London. That's why I had to smile for a second, and it sort of ties into what you've been saying about your exploration plans. And where did it go? Or you forgot to tag it. That's why the story. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Where did it go? There you go. Ralph, what are your immediate exploration plans once you're able to get going? And what's the difference between jam and marmalade?
It's a long-running joke to me and Brian, that second one. I'm not going to go there. Thank you, Brian. Yeah, well, I mean, we just touched on the immediate exploration plans. So, you know, that 500,000 to 700,000 is what we'd like to spend. I mean, we're ready to go with that as soon as we can get the geologists on site at Chaikoya. We've got the equipment, we've got the assay costs sorted out. We can move on that fairly quickly. I'd estimate a first pass drill program for both projects would be about 2,000 to 2,500 meters. Our best guess on costing of that all up, including assays, is between $400 to $500 a meter. So you're probably looking at $1 to $1.5 million per project for a first pass drill program. And obviously, we don't have that currently in the bank. We couldn't fund $3 million worth of exploration with the property payments coming up. But we have been seeing, you know, a steady trickle of warrant exercising out there, the 12-cent warrants. So that's gradually bringing in more cash into the treasury. So fingers crossed, if the share price continues to stay where it is and the market still favors the sort of gold and silver explorers, then we may be able to fund it from warrant exercising. We'll see.
Okay, no, fantastic. Another question was sent to me via direct message here on Twitter. And the question is, like, both properties had a fair amount of dough spent on them, and there are old mineral resource estimates at 200 grams per ton and 100 grams per ton. What is it that you see or think you can do to discover, prove that those grades can be increased or made more economical?
Well, if you go to the corporate presentation on the website at one point, I forget which slide it is, but there's a cross-section through the Chaikoya, the Lalonde vein, which shows you what we're thinking there. That resource that was calculated historically, the 4.7 million tons at 200 grams, is an underground resource. We're not looking at the project as a potential underground operation. We would like to consider it as a lower cost open pit operation, bearing in mind silver prices that are roughly equivalent to where we currently are, maybe in the $15 to $20 a ton range, $20 an ounce range. That means we could probably swallow a lower grade, higher tonnage but lower grade. So as that resource is confirmed, you may actually see, given what we're trying to target there, you may actually see that grade drop slightly, but hopefully we're demonstrating economics at the same time, positive economics. We'll see.
Okay. No, I think that's a good answer to that question. And just as a follow-up, it's a follow-up to the Chaikoya. That one, the project, I always pronounce it wrong. And it seemed that the Lalonde veins seem very compelling and with its thickness. And it shows some promise. Are there other veins similar to Lalonde's, or what are you following there?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of veins, Lalonde, Lucy, Gladys, there's a whole series of veins there, but it comes back to what we touched on earlier on, that at the moment our focus is on trying to demonstrate over probably a 1 to 1.5 kilometer section of Lalonde that we've got sufficient mineralization in the hanging wall there that we can justify an open pit target. That's our focus. We think it's premature to start just drilling holes all over the property. I think that wouldn't be focused enough. And our focus has got to be on economics first and foremost, given the silver price, you know, $15, $16 a ton, an ounce. I keep saying per ton. $15, $16 an ounce. And given the sort of, you know, the nervous state of the markets, we've got to be disciplined from an economic standpoint on this rather than just exploring.
Okay, great. I'd really love to go to Vanessa Pickering's question because it's up here on the screen. It's a good layup for you, but I really want to organize more of a geo panel one of these days and get you on it. And because she's been asking about, you've worked in some areas most would see as unsafe or unstable. You've worked in Iran, Pakistan, and all these places. And you write a blog in the Urban Crows blog as well, where you're commenting and writing about your adventures out in the wild. Let's just answer it. Quick, and we'll get to it in another panel as well. But do you think we're missing out as an industry by being too risk averse, or is jurisdiction king? And see if you can keep that to like 30 seconds because we were running up to our time limit here.
Sure. I think you can't put staff in danger. You can't put geologists in danger. You know, there've been a number of cases over the last sort of decade where geologists have been killed. I would not put a geologist into a situation or into a country where there was actual physical risk. I've been in Pakistan, I've been in Yemen, I've been in Iran. Iran was very safe. Pakistan wasn't so safe, but I didn't realize it at the time. And Yemen was outrageously crazy. I mean, it was, yeah. Wild West in places. I would not put a geologist into a place, regardless of how prospective it was, if there was a risk that geologist could be kidnapped or even killed.
No.
I think that's the primary overlay. Geology is fascinating, but physical risk has got to be a major consideration. That would be my answer there.
You can swallow
political risk. You know, you can swallow the fact that the mining ministry may void your claims. If the geology is compelling enough, but not having geologists in danger.
Yeah, no, that's the perfect answer to that. I think nothing is worth harming people or hurting people over it. So
no.
Okay, let's wrap this up here. We've been chatting about aftermath, so let's put a bow around it. What can we expect as investors from aftermath over the next, let's say, 3 to 6 months? What do we have to look forward to?
Well, hopefully in the next 2 to 6 months, we can get back on the ground. That's the big question that's at the front of everybody's minds. Get back on the ground and start prepping for a drill program. If we're lucky and the restrictions lift, then we may be in a position to drill towards, I guess, maybe in the fourth quarter. But at the moment, it's all up in the air. We can't say. Clearing up the technical programs and actually putting out in detail what it is we want to do. That's obviously something the market wants to see from us. How are we going to fund that? The technical side of it is first and foremost. And at the moment, I can't be specific about when we can start that. I mean, you and as I say, we were talking half an hour ago when we heard from the geologist down in Chile that he's on lockdown again. And then I guess in the medium term, we would like to be at a PEA level on at least one of these projects within 24 to 36 months. So we don't want to hang around with these. We want to move fairly quickly, which would mean early met testing as well, getting that stuff done. We have a lot of material at surface at the Cachinal project that we think we can. There's existing leach pads there that have material on. So we have an opportunity to take some fairly large samples and run metallurgical test work on those. And hopefully demonstrate the process route that we're going to adopt.
No,
I guess ask me again in 3 months once we're clear what the restrictions are or aren't.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, like, you got to come back on in a couple months to give us an update on what's going on down in South America. So it'd be great to have you. So, Ralph, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
And, thanks, Craig.
You know, everybody else, thanks for your questions. It was great. I think it was a really informative session here with Ralph. Make sure to follow us here on Twitter, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Make sure you turn on the alerts on Twitter and YouTube. That way you get alerted or push notifications when we go live with other interviews and chats. And that's it. Stay safe, everybody, and talk to you soon.